Good morning and welcome to Grand Rounds. It's my pleasure to introduce our guest speaker, Dr. Natan Zundel. I was at the American College of Gastro and Neurology meeting in Las Vegas this past October, you know, and heard like probably 100 different speakers over 5 days and everything. I said, this guy's tremendous. We have to get him here for our Grand Round series. Dr. Zundel is a clinical professor of surgery and serves as vice chairman of the Department of Surgery at FIU, Herbert Wertheim College of Medicine in Miami, and serves as the medical director of the Bariatric and Metabolic Institute at Jackson North Medical Center in Miami. He's a consultant for minimally invasive and bariatric surgery, excuse my pronunciation of the Spanish, Fundación Santa Fe de Bogotá, and his extensive experience with minimally invasive and bariatric surgical procedures. He's an active member of multiple surgical societies. He's had multiple publications. He's very active in the teaching program at the hospitals which he's affiliated with. He's the former president of the IFSO World for 2015 and 16. He's published extensively in peer-reviewed magazines and has written multiple book chapters. It's with great pride that I welcome Dr. Zundel. His lecture today topic is obesity, the problem, prevention, and management. Please join me in welcoming him.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Rosenthal, for the invitation. This is the disclosures of the companies. I have any relation with them. I have another two disclosures. I'm going to give you the first one. I've been here 17 years. I learned English in Miami, so good luck trying to understand anything I'm going to say. So I don't know how you enjoy the talk. I never understand. Nobody understands what I'm saying. So this is how the world changed. You know, we moved from big TVs to flat TVs and for flat people to big people. So what it looked like a small problem became a big problem for us. For us, we divide our patients, and I think it's very wrong, this division, but we don't have nothing else, BMIs. So we know that anyone from 20 to 25, basically, is normal weight. Overweight, 25 to 30. Obese, more than 30. It's starting here when the patient become part of our programs in surgery. But before 35, there's not much we can do for this patient, and they are already obese. And now here in the U.S., we have new classification because we're getting bigger and bigger people. I did a person with 91 BMI. I thought he was huge. A friend of mine in New York, 101 BMI. This is people of 800, 900 pounds. So this is we're going for the super obese. We got the triple X. The movies now, you can see it is pretty good. And the problem is not only here. The problem is everywhere. According to the World Health Organization, overweight is one of the top five risk conditions where people die. More than 1 billion people are overweight, and 300 million people are considered obese in the world. And the problem is basically mathematics. It's energy in, energy out. So it doesn't matter what we think is that one. I'm going to show you my next disclosure. I don't know if there's volume there. No. So, what time is it? So, can you tell me what time is it? 7:35. Are you sure? Yeah, 7:35. Okay, thank you. So, it's Italy, of course. The guy goes and comes back. And the guy is still there, of course. Good morning, sir. You still here? Okay, of course. What I'm going to be doing today. I fixed my watch. Can you tell me what time is it? 5:15. But it is perfect. It's exactly the time. You need to explain to me how you know what time is it. Please, you need to explain to me. So that's my next disclosure. A lot of the things I'm going to tell you are perception, and there is always something hidden in our patients, in what we do, at some of the lot of new things that you hear. we have in bariatric surgery. So I remember the first time I came to the U.S., of course, I went to Disney. I was like 14. The next time I came, I was like 20-something. And this is the big change I saw in Disney. You know, obesity becoming a big problem. I've been asked to ask about prevention. Let me show you what we achieve in our country in prevention. This is the United States of America, 1987. You see, the country, the more you move to the red color, the orange color, is the increase in percentage of obese and morbidly obese patients we have in the country. So welcome to prevention, nothing. When the NIH approved surgery, it was only for treatment. There were three or four big phrases regarding to prevention, nothing happened. Not only in the U.S., in the rest of the world, prevention is failing. And this is their recent numbers. When you go to orange, that is, for example, Canada, more than 30% of the population is obese. When you move already to the U.S., more than 40% of the population is obese. So we have 18 million morbidly obese people in the U.S., so it's BMI more than 35. But we have close to 65 million people that they are obese in the country. It's not only here. McDonald's also is in Africa now. So we've seen this problem last year. We helped create the Chinese Association for Bariatric Surgery. China only have 3% of obesity, but 3% in a 2,000 million people. They have 60 million people who need surgery in the country. So even that looks small problem. Japan, 5%, but Japan is very big. India, 5% of obesity, 1.5 billion people. So you make the numbers. And we are not even in the first thing. American Samoa, places that you've never been. This is the big proportion of obesity per capita. Maybe you heard about Samoa, Kuwait. We are not even here. In number of patients, yes. In proportion per capita, no. China, India, Australia. It doesn't matter where you go. Latin America. Brazil is the second country in the world who does more bariatric surgery. The first one is the U.S., and I'm going to give you some numbers there. So worldwide, and this is from 2000 from the World Watch Institute, this is the percentage of overweight adults. China, less than 10%. You move to the U.S., more than 60%. Russia, close to 60%. So there is a big epidemic, it's going everywhere. And for good or for bad, that's my other disclosure, I'm a surgeon, so I apologize for whatever I think that. Sometimes we think we're better than everybody, but we are not. So the only treatment option that we have today for the morbidly obese patient is surgery. Yes, we have multidisciplinary groups, we have many other things, new medications approved. I never say drugs again, I'm Colombian, I don't want to end in jail. If you read the news this morning, they catch another plane coming from Colombia with cocaine. Then I need to explain every time to go to the airport that I've been here 17 years. So the only treatment is surgery. But this is the biggest problem. How are we going to prevent and solve obesity even when you go to the fitness center, you use electrical escalators? I don't know how many of you have been in Houston. You go to Houston, you have a biggest meal you ever. When you go to your car, that is less than block away, a golf car pick you up to make sure you don't waste one calorie from the restaurant to your car. So not only we are not preventing, we are promoting obesity. So there's nothing we can do about it. So we treat as many patients as we can. Remember I told you we have 18 million people who need surgery in the U.S., 18 million people. So we have these options for our patients. All they're approved by the ASMBS, the American Society of Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery. The band is still in the market. It was a big girl in town a couple of years ago. So we did in a year, 1 year, like maybe 5 years ago, 80,000 that year. In my own experience, I placed like 4,000 bands. We removed more or less like 60% of the band. So we have worked forever in the country to remove in the one we place. Not even the new ones. Then we have the gastric bypass that's been around for more than 30 years. It's the gold standard operation. And we have the new girl in town that is the sleeve gastrectomy that we only remove more or less 85% of the stomach here. Here we need to reconnect, and we remove close to 95% of the stomach. And this one that is not very common in the U.S. is called ileopancreatic diversion, duodenal switch. This one is done in the U.S. more or less 1% of the cases we do here. It's more complicated, has the better results, but the quality of life is not that good. So when you review what measurement we use to decide our patient did well or not, we use percentage of excessive weight loss. So according to the NIH, that is 1991, that's what I tell you, we even in bariatric surgery, we have very bad measurements that we haven't changed in years. The percentage of excessive weight loss has to be at least 50%. So if you have 100 pounds overweight, you need to lose at least 50. So if you have 200, 100. So when you see all the patients, according to the procedure, you see that if you do bands, laparoscopic adjustable gastric band, the range is in the lower that we want to achieve. Patients like it. A lot of surgeons like it because the complications were very low. Then you have the bypass. The bypass has the best results. But when you think everybody get cured with the bypass, that's not correct. We get from 56 to 66%, but it's still the best results because this lasts at least for 15 to 20 years. And then when you saw the BPD or duodenal switch, you got the best results, around 70% of the percentage of excessive weight loss, 15 to 20 years. But the patient need to understand that there are differences between the band, the sleeve, and the bypass, the expectation for the weight loss, how you lose your weight, how many people we kill, what complications we have, and for how long. I can tell my patient that if you do a sleeve gastrectomy and you survive me after 2 months, the chances of complications are almost none, except weight regain. That is not a complication. But if you have a bypass, it doesn't matter. For the long you live, you can have complications because you can have internal hernias, you can have marginal ulcers, you can have many things. So that's why these results are better than this one, because the more aggressive we do an operation, the better results we get for weight loss, but the more chance we get from complications from those patients. So can you adjust only the band? It's reversible. The band is reversible. The gastric bypass is reversible. We don't tell the patients, so people don't tell the patients that the reversion of a bypass is a bigger operation than doing a bypass, but it's reversible. The sleeve is not reversible. We cannot put back all the stomach that we remove. In spite of that, bariatric surgery from 1992 to 2003 in those ranges, look how it increases. Biggest change? Laparoscopy. So all these cases were done open in the past when laparoscopy came from other procedures. Dr. Whitgrove around 1995, 1994, did his first gastric bypass by laparoscopy, then the numbers increased. People accept the same operation with less pain and quicker recovery. But look at this change. Gastric bypass was 70% of the operation in the country up to 3 years ago. Now it's less than 50%. Band went from 25% 3 years ago to less than 10%. The sleeve gastrectomy is the only one who's been increasing from 45 to 55%. Remember, the sleeve has been around only in the U.S. 5 or 6 years. Outside the world, around 10 years. But here, 5 to 6 years. The BPD, the duodenal switch, went low. So in the country, it's 1.5%. And the BBG almost disappeared from our experience. This is the number from the American Society on Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery, and I want to show you something here. 18 million people need surgery. Look how many we do in the year. It's nothing. It doesn't matter how many we do. By the time we do the 18 million, there will be another 36 million. Surgery is not going to solve this problem. Surgery will help a lot of people, but it's not going to solve this problem. And we only have this number. Why? Because the insurance don't pay, because the patient don't want them. I will explain a little bit later. This is the other change. Bypass. Band. the sleeve is the only one that has been increasing. More than a half of the cases now in the U.S. with the sleeve. PPD is almost gone. But this is my other concern, and this is the concern of the companies, and this is the concern of the insurances. Revisions, very stable, 6%, 6%. 2014, double. This year, increase again. Why? Because this is a chronic disease. Some of our patients with the band need the band to be removed and convert to another one, but some of the bypasses fail, and some of the other ones fail too. So out of 80 million people, why we don't do more cases? Why we keep doing only this? Sorry. This is one of the reasons. People are scared of this operation. The American Society of Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery, yeah, this is the horn of the bull, yeah. So the American Society of Bariatric and Metabolic Surgery did a survey with patients. There are three reasons the patient didn't do surgery more often. One is this one. They're scared of the operation. They're scared they're going to die. They're scared they're going to have complications the rest of their life. They're scared they have with a problem for the rest of their life. But we showed them to the patient that bariatric surgery and the mortality rate of our operation compare with bigger operation, we have much better results in complication and mortality. This is a paper published in the New England Journal. As you can see, look at the complication and mortality of the bypass compared with colectomies, compared with cholecystectomies, and compared with hip replacement. Long-term mortality after bypass, New England Journal of Medicine. The patient who have the bypass compared with the patient who didn't have surgery decreased the mortality by 40% in the patients who has the operation. So you're going to die less if you have the operation. Your chances of survival if you lose weight and you have the operation are much better. So the risk is less. Is that misinformation? I think there is misinformation, but not only in the patient. We discovered, too, that a lot of the primary physicians, some of the referrals, a lot of them still think that the operation is very risky because they remember all the things that happened when bariatric surgery was open, when all one patient that bad, and that patient is, I don't know, the coach of an NFL team, and then bariatric surgery sucks. So a lot of celebrities get their operation. A lot of them, you don't even notice, they do very well. And then suddenly one famous person do what? And then you go to CNN. Long-term mortality results. Look at this. Follow-up. Bypass reduced the mortality by 40%. And how you reduce the mortality? Coronary artery disease, diabetes, cancer, other diseases. Reduces in more than half. So bariatric surgery has advantages and it's very safe. But this is the other problem. Through the ASMBS, we discovered that most of our morbidly obese patients, they don't think they are morbidly obese. They see more and more people that look exactly like them, so that's the normal. So a lot of patients are scared, but a fair amount of patients, they don't see themselves as morbidly obese. Or they know they are a little obese, but they don't need the surgery because they think and they've been told that with diet they're going to be able to lose the weight. And I don't know how many of you believe in reincarnation, but even if you believe in reincarnation, you're not going to diet in this life to eat the next one. So people are going to eat in this life. So either we do something before, something during, and something after, or we ended up dying quicker than ever before. That's the other problem. We surgeons went to the patients, went to the companies, went to the physicians, and we told them that we cure diabetes with the surgery. And that's not true. We told them that we cure every patient of the obesity, and that's not true. We have regain of weight in 17% of our patients. Our diabetes, initially we cure like 93%, but we have remission up to 15 years in most of them, but some of them will come back. So it's what we promised to them that is changing. There was a big meeting last year, and we changed the way we're going to define success in surgery for bariatric patients and in diabetes treatment for bariatric patients. So we go from a chronic disease. Imagine, and this is one of the fights, for example, with the companies, with the insurances. You have a colon cancer. You come back 5 years later with a metastasis. Is somebody going to deny your treatment? Somebody going to tell you you cannot have the other side of the colon removed, or you cannot have some of your liver removed? No. But you lose weight. You get remission of your diabetes. Now you regain weight, and the insurance will tell you that you fail your opportunity that you cannot have. So the first thing is obesity is a chronic disease. I mean, first, it's a disease. Sometimes it's very difficult even to explain to people this is a disease. Second, it's a chronic disease. Third, what we do, yes, we cure a good amount of people for their weight. We achieve a lot of remission in a lot of our patients. So we have patients that didn't need medication for diabetes for 10 years. Now they start to need medication again. And you guys know better than me that those 10 years of remission help prolong the survival and the quality of life of this person. So we changed how we're going to present them to them. So we're changing how we're going to say our bariatric results are in a chronic disease. Today, the insurance are telling the patient, you got one chance. If you fail, I'm not going to pay another surgery. So that's going to become a problem for us. So no cure, we have remissions. And in diabetes, we change our goals, because if you read the papers about diabetes, you will find that a lot of people find a measure, cure, or remission in many different ways that was not even able to evaluate for us. So what is the future? And the future is what is more interesting to me. So to understand the future, you look at the past. So you read what it was told to Einstein for his professor in Germany. He said, you have an interesting theory in your article in Annals de Physique, but you have failed your conclusion about the nature of light and the fundamental connection between space and time are radical. Overall, we find your assumption to be more artistic than actual physics. So we move from this kind of operation. This is the first successful abdominal operation by McDowell in 1809. We move to this. Yes, remember, we were butchers in the past, to a little bit like this, and now we move like this. So our operations are safer. But even that I'm a surgeon, I understand that what we do for bariatric patients is plumbing. So you cannot expect plumbing to cure patients in a problem that is multifactorial. You have genetic, you have hormones, you have enzymes, you have social life, you have behavior, you have a lot of things you're not going to change with plumbing. So the only thing in surgery that is changing, except that we're doing more sleeves, and believe me, the sleeve maybe will be the next band, because the sleeve is much easier to do. The results are pretty good. And if you ask me, if I need a surgery today, I will allow, unless I am diabetic, I will do a sleeve. Because if you don't die the first 2 months from a leak or something like that, your quality of life will be pretty good. And the chances of regaining weight, yes, it's like 23%. But it's pretty good. The bypass, you know, you can have problems all your life. But that's why you get better results. So the only thing that is new, that is not yet approved in the U.S., is the DS operation that I showed you, the duodenal switch. Now, in order to reduce the complications and the leak rate, they change from 2 anastomoses to 1. So the less anastomosis we do, the less chances that we have problems. And we know that the post-op complications will be decreased. And the problem we have with this operation, when you do a duodenal switch of a BPD, the patient gets 90% of remission of diabetes, 70% of percentage of excessive weight loss, the best results. But then you have maybe 10 to 15 episodes of diarrhea a day. You have malnutrition. So it's a balance. The far away you will reconnect the intestines, less absorption, more weight loss, more malnutrition. So they're trying to avoid that one, and they change it to this one. So sleeve, but this sleeve is not with a bougie of 34. We do it with a bougie of 54, only one anastomosis, not two, so we don't not cut and connect and reconnect, only this one. And we leave a longer alimentary common bile duct. So as you can see, we reconnect after the pylorus to 2.5 meters away from the ileocecal bile. So all this is just staying in place for nothing. So you increase malabsorption, but then you reduce complication. This is not approved yet here. There are three groups doing it here. The biggest experience is in Spain with more than 1,000 patients done. The result seems to be pretty good. But we cannot keep thinking only in plumbing when we are trying to do something for them. And this is three groups that also we don't address very well. One is adolescents. Now there are big groups doing adolescents. And I get two questions with adolescents. If we do a sleeve, the family asks me, what are the repercussions or implications of removing 85% of the stomach? And honestly, I have to tell them I don't have a clue. I don't expect no problems with that, but I don't have a clue. When you're going to do a 13-year-old, you're going to do a 14-year-old, what are the implications? I don't have a clue. But I don't expect anything, but I don't have a clue. Second, and this is the biggest concern for me, two papers, this is from Varela. Morbidity of bariatric operation in adolescents is much lower, of course. They have less comorbidities, they are in very good shape, but the mortality is the same. So if you do adults and adolescents, you're going to kill the same number of people. And you know the implications socially, in the media, etc., things like that. Second is this group of patients. More often than ever, we tell the patient, you cannot have your incisional hernia until you lose 40 pounds. I'm not going to do your spine surgery until you lose 40 pounds. I'm not going to do your hernia repair. I'm not going to do this operation or that one. Even there is a study that they're doing at the Cleveland Clinic that if you have colon cancer and you're morbidly obese, they're doing something to this patient in surgery to make them lose weight and have the colectomy 1 or 2 months later. Because the complications they get and the leak rate increase 5-6 times fold with morbidly obese patients. So it's not only how they die, it's also that the regular diet, the day-by-day life is more complicated. What about this group of patients? Transplant patients. There is more than 1 million patients who need kidney transplant that they cannot go to the list because they're morbidly obese. If you're morbidly obese, they don't put you in the list because the incidence of rejection and complications from the anastomosis of the artery and the anastomosis of the vein are much, much higher. So if you're morbidly obese, you don't go to the transplant list. So we've been doing some operation for this patient. In the past, we did bypasses. But if you're going to go to a liver transplant, you did a bypass, you change the anatomy, a mess for the surgeon when he's going to do the liver transplant. Then you have now the patient who already have a transplant, and then you're going to do a bariatric operation. What is the bioabsorption? What is the bioavailability of the medications we gave them? There is at least 2 reports of cardiac transplant patients who die after a gastric bypass 1 and 2 years later because the availability of the immunosuppression was not the one it was expected. So we don't do bypasses in that patient. So we still have the sleeve, but that you're going to do sleeve with portal hypertension and a liver transplant. So you see, there is a lot of different situations that we cannot address yet. And this is my biggest complication. We're doing now more than 100,000 sleeve a year here in the country. So as we did with the band, now we're doing a sleeve to everybody. So if you ask the sleeveologist, the sleeve cure athlete food, migraine, whatever you do a sleeve, it cures everything. So like the band did, that's not going to happen. So if we do sleeve to everybody, we're going to fail a lot. We're going to fail like 30%. And I will be here in 5 years telling you that now this is the operation we're doing to revive the sleeve to something else. So we need to be very careful because the operation is pretty good, but like anything else, it's not for everybody. So we need to be careful with those for the future. So no indication, because I cannot say diabetes is a contraindication for the sleeve because it's not. But I don't do in my diabetic patient's sleeve because the bypass is the best operation for diabetes. But if you do a survey between the bariatric surgeons in the country, a lot of them will tell you they do sleeve for the diabetic because it's better than doing nothing. Then they're going to come back. So what is coming for the future? Because we don't have anything for low BMIs. From BMI from 30 to 35, the only procedure approved in the U.S. is the band. You know how many band is being placed in the last 5 years for low BMI that has been approved for the FDA? The insurance don't pay for that band. The surgeons who do the low BMI, they don't use it for the band. So most of the bands, they are done in the country and, of course, outside the country for this low BMI are cash patients. But people outside the U.S. are doing for those low BMI sleeve gastrectomy with better results. But it's not approved here for the BMI. Because here we have approval 35 with comorbidities or 40 without comorbidities. If you have 30 to 35, you don't have anything. And now we're talking 40 million people in that range. What about the obese people? So if you do bariatric surgery, you see a lot of patients that come to you and you say, your BMI is 32. I cannot do anything for you. Okay, doctor. How many pounds do I need to gain so you do the surgery to me? This is very often, and that's the problem. So they're looking for a solution, and we are not offering any. Because the medications, yes, the new medications, they do a little bit better. You're going to end up losing like 5 to 10%. But as long as you stop the medication, the weight loss is gone. And the complication of the medication is still there, not the one like in the past. There are a lot of people live from the lawsuits, from those ones. For revisions, God didn't send us to the world with a zipper. And we keep going 2 times revisions, 3 times revisions. The morbidity, the mortality, and the results in the second time, third time are much worse. And the weight loss is not that good. So we need to be very careful there. And also the patients are scared. So we need to offer our patients something that is more acceptable to them. So this is what we have today. We have diet and exercise, medications, and then we move to the banding that, as you know, is not as good. And then you go to the bypass, the sleeve come here. What we do with all these people? So we have, and this is what we're trying to do now. We're trying to do intraluminal devices by endoscopy, some procedures by endoscopy, and we're doing some more minimal invasive procedures. And this covers a big gap that I just mentioned, the low BMI, the obese that they haven't arrived to morbidly obese, and a lot of people who come for help and there's no way to help them. So probably this is the surgery of the future. I wouldn't say not only for bariatric, but it's the surgery of the future. And I'm a surgeon, so when I say this to the surgeon, they don't like me very much, but it's okay. I don't speak English, I don't understand what they're saying. So bariatric endoscopy is becoming so big that, as you know, the ASG, American Society of Endoscopic Gastroenterologists, create, like a year and a half ago, a big division that is called AB, Association for Bariatric Endoscopy, in a year, more than 1,000 members, because this is becoming a big thing. And you have from devices to suturing devices to extreme devices. So I'm going to give you like a tour of some of these things. This is approved in the U.S., 4 months ago, there were no balloons in the U.S. approved. In these 4 months, 3 type of balloons are approved already. So I'm going to show you which one are approved. This is one. And this is considered the golden standard from devices. This is a balloon that you place by endoscopy. And this is how you see you're going to place the balloon by endoscopy. The balloon, of course, you place them deflated. It comes with a connector that you're going to inflate. We put around 600 cc's, even that is off-label. We learned a long time ago, I put before even coming to this country, 600 balloons. So the balloon has been around for a while, not here. But even here, in the 80s, they placed like 20,000 balloons, but it was removed because it broke and get obstruction. And but the balloon changes, so you inflate the balloon, you leave it in the fundus. Anybody can put a balloon. Not everybody can take out a balloon. So you have to be a better endoscopist to remove the balloon. Only what I've seen in Brazil, they remove the balloon without general anesthesia, but Brazil is Brazil. So we remove it under general anesthesia because you're going to bring the balloon back. Sometimes the balloon gets lost. When you are very close to the trachea, you can have problems. So we have the patient with a tube, and I sleep better. That makes us more expensive. And that's the other problem. You can place and remove balloons outside the U.S. for around $3,500. Here, around $8,000. It's not yet reimbursed by the insurance because it's been approved for 4 months. So this is one of the balloons going to be removed here. And this is the other balloon that is approved here. It's a double balloon. So remember I told you there were 600 cc's in the other one? You have here two balloons from 350 to 400 each one. They say that the advantage is one balloon can break. You have the other one. The results are a little bit less better than the other one. With the tip and with this space here, we see more ulceration, more injuries a little bit to the mucosa of the stomach. But it's approved here, and you can use it here too. And this is the third one that was approved like a month and a half ago. It's swallowable. So next thing you know, you're going to go to Eckers and Publix, and you're going to buy one, you swallow, and then you go home. So you swallow this. It comes with a catheter. And then the whole idea of this one is you put one with 300 cc's. A couple of weeks later, you swallow another one and they put another 300 cc's. And a couple of weeks later, you put the third one with another 250 and 300 cc's. So the biggest problem with the balloon is in the first week, they feel, I would say, 2% of the patient outside the U.S., 12% of the patient in the trials in the U.S., they feel so much uncomfort that they want the balloon removed in the first week. It doesn't matter if they pay for that. They don't like it because the stomach is trying to take it out. So some patients need sedation. So it's more uncomfortable than the operation the first 3-4 days. If you survive that week, then you don't feel it anymore, really. So putting these three in that 1.5 month period, they reduce those symptoms. But you see, the weight loss is not the same. So each one has advantages and not. So what do we have outside the U.S.? Welcome to the Publix of balloons in the world. You see, the first time I came to the U.S., I think was, when I came to live 1999, I went to the supermarket, I almost cried. I didn't know what cereal, because there were like 20 million. I didn't know what cheese to buy. You see, I go to a store in Colombia where three cheeses. I picked the three, one. So this is what happened with this one. So you don't even know what is better and what is not. So I'm going to show you a little ones. But, for example, the swallowable outside the U.S., remember this like dinosaur that you buy to your kids that they put in water and they grow like they have balloons like that now. So you swallow, and then with your own fluids, the balloon is going to increase by himself. And then after 6 months, you remove it. So people are doing a lot of things with this. I'm going to show you the most common. This one is air-filled, no fluid-filled. And I don't like it very much because it escapes. It always flies here, and it's not approved by the FDA, but this is one of the big ones. And this is the other one that is in the study here. This has a connector, so you can come back, remove fluid, put back more fluid. This is better than what I saw in Italy 4 years ago when they did this through a gastrostomy. They were putting fluids. They connected the balloon to a gastrostomy. So then you put fluid and remove fluid. That's a crazy thing. But this one, you can go back, put more. But I learned from the band. My worst patients with the band were all physicians because they have the port. So before they have a congress, they have a dinner, they put the needle and they remove some fluid. Then Monday, they put more fluid. So if you can adjust, I'm going on vacation to Tahiti, let's remove all the fluid. So that concept I don't like. And now we have the suturing devices. Suturing devices, we've been working maybe at least 5 years. They were not pretty good. Now we have two that they are pretty good. So see this like a needle holder through the scope. You can use it for whatever you want. We've been using it to close colovesical fistulas. We use it to close perforation of the sleeve. So you can suture whatever. So I see it as that one. But we develop a procedure that is primary for obesity by endoscopy. What we do is this greater curvature, anterior, posterior, so we create like an endosleeve without stapling. This is going to look like an accordion, so you reduce more or less in 60-65% the size of the stomach. And we start to use it initially for the revision of the bypass. Today, when a bypass regains weight, I almost send my patients to my multidisciplinary group because there's not much you can do. In the past, if you see the pouch dilated, the anastomosis is wider than you left it, we go back, we trim the pouch, we reduce the anastomosis, the morbidity and the mortality of that one is higher. And the weight loss that we gain, it was 6%. So you have patients that lose 150 pounds. They come back to you because, and they always regain with taxes, so they come back with you with 200 more. And then now you go back to surgery, you do all this big surgery, and they lose 6%. So when you have today a patient that regained weight with the bypass, we change the length of the bowel. Yes, the more they lose weight, the more complication with malnutrition, as I showed you before. So when the bypass regain weight, we are in a difficult line. So what we decided is, okay, the anastomosis, if the anatomy is normal, I don't see the patient anymore. Psychologists, behavioral therapists, I don't see the patient. There's nothing I can do. If the anatomy looks like I have a dilated pouch or dilated stomach, then we go by endoscopy and we reduce, we leave them like 1.3 centimeters, our normal anastomosis. When they dilate to 2 centimeters, 2.5, 3, you understand that the restriction and some of the affected bypass are gone. So we used to go back, trim, redo the anastomosis. You see here the small bowel and you see here the G-junction, the anastomosis. So what we do is go back and we place sutures by endoscopy. Yes, the sutures are going to go away in around 2 years. But in those 2 years, in a procedure that lasts 30 minutes by endoscopy, outpatient, the patient lose the same 6 or 7% like with the operation. For me, it's more than enough. And if I can, the problem now is reimbursement, but if you forget reimbursement, if I can go early, not when the patient regained 100 pounds, when the patient regained 25 pounds or 20 pounds, if you go by this and then you do this early, maybe you will never get this regain of weight. But today, this starts to be reimbursed. Yes, not as we like it, but they reimburse the endoscopy, they reimburse the suturing device, so we are there for revisions. And I'm showing you a little bit how this device works because it's very interesting. You are not surgeons here, most of you, so you haven't seen the endostitch that moved the needle from one side to the other one. So the first time I used it for surgery, I said, wow. One device that moved the needle from one side to the other one, this is perfect. And then I told in a dinner, and my father-in-law say, the sewing machine has been doing that for 100 years. So why are you so amazed? They say, we surgeons are slow people. So now we have something by endoscopy, so UGIs are even slower. Yeah. So the suturing device does the same. They move the needle from one side to the other one. So the first thing we do is we burn, create a rough surface around the anastomosis because we know that we stick better, that we heal better, and then we suture with the device and we convert anastomosis from 2 centimeters to 0.8 to 1 centimeter, and then we don't have to do anything else. The patient go home the same day, we put them in liquid diet for a week, and after a year, year and a half, they come back, they start to regain weight, and then you can do it again. I don't think I have much paper of these ones. We published this long time ago. This is 2011. We do the endoscopic revision. This is our preliminary results. We did it first, of course, outside of the United States. And the results were pretty good. But this is long-term data from the group who's been doing more cases in the world. That is Spain. The second group now, Mayo Clinic in Rochester. They have 120 people in a waiting list for doing this procedure in the Mayo Clinic in Rochester. The group of Chris Gusteau are doing a big job with this one. But look at this. 240 days, almost a year, 63% of excessive weight loss. So this is pretty good. This is not going to hold for more than 2 years. But at 2 years, you go back by endoscopy, you put another stitch, and then you do it again with very few complications. The problem, every time you do this, $8,000. It's much cheaper than surgery. But still. So what about primary procedures? Not revisions, primary procedures. So we have something that we're doing with this suturing device. We create, as I mentioned before, like a line of suture. We cannot close here because we need all this fluid to go through the normal way. Or also, putting stitches close to the angle of his is very difficult. So there are two different devices. One, suture very well all the body and the antrum. Very difficult for the fundus. The other one is disposable, the scope. It comes very flexible, and it only uses the fundus. Ideal, use both. So it's 8001, 8000 the other one. Welcome to life. No. So we cannot use both, and we don't have the perfect one. So look at this. The stitches, when we started to do them long time ago, first in peak, we have the doubt if the stitches were through all the layers. Because if you grab only the mucosa, it's not going to hold. Look at this. We put the stitches, and they go all the layers. Is that so that the first 10 patients we did in Dominican Republic, they all have pneumoperitoneum? It's CO2. We don't use air for this. We use CO2. Because then we know the CO2 is going to go by himself very quick in the next 24 hours. So that tells you only that they go through all the layers. That is very important for us as surgeons to know that. But look at this. This is X-rays. If I don't tell you where the X-rays are, most of you will tell me this is a regular sleeve gastrectomy. This is all endoscopic procedure. We did in our first 160 patients X-ray in each one, the first day, the first month, the 6 months, and endoscopy for the whole year. And it, see, it looks exactly like the sleeve gastrectomy. What I mentioned to you, the fundus, we cannot reach very well with this device. So you see, this look very well like a sleeve, but then you have a little bit of fundus. So you cannot expect to be the same like the sleeve. Also, once you remove the stomach, most of the ghrelin receptors are gone. So our patient in the sleeve, they lose a lot of appetite. But look, 1 year after, still look like the sleeve endoscopically. But let me tell you this. When you reach the 2 years, some of the stitches are loose now. So what? You go back, you put another stitches, and you keep doing this. Patients do outpatients, they go home. Again, cost, nobody pay for this today. The pose is the other one, the only one who does for the fundus. Look at this. The excessive weight lost in 1 year. And this is the procedure. Look the difference. Only collapses the fundus. So it brings all the fundus down. As you know, the fundus, most of the receptors for feeling full after you eat are in the fundus. So once you collapse the fundus, you feel satiety much easier. The results are not as good as the other one, but they are still pretty good. But again, it's expensive. If you can combine this with the other one, probably you have the best endoscopic procedure. But again, beware of what's happening, you see? Volume, but it's not working. It's okay. Not everything you see or is approved is necessarily good or perfect. So I'm sure you're aware of this new thing. How many of you know about the Aspire device? No? Oh, welcome to life. Okay. This has been approved for 4 months now in the U.S., You do a percutaneous gastrostomy. You connect it outside to this pump. And this is how it works. You eat. Half an hour after you eat, the patient, if he's in a restaurant, go to the restroom. In his house, he can do whatever, but he goes to the restroom. Put water inside the stomach. So you are like blending. So all the food that you have, you will help it dilute. Then you use the pump to take it out. So we created percutaneous bulimia. Approved by the FDA. And it's even worse. I asked the company like a year ago when they were doing the trial, because most of the trials were doing in the University of Washington in St. Louis. So it's a very serious group of people. And I asked them, you know, I don't know any Latina, and most of girls that I know, they will not allow you to have one of these. They say, we understand that. So now you know what they do, because you don't have all the machine. You have only this, and then you open it when you're going to put the tube, or that's it. But this is closed. So now you have it like a piercing. So it says, love you. You have in different colors. Welcome to San Francisco. I hate love Trump. Let me see. So, but for my surprise, and this is really a surprise to me. So this is the mechanism, the pump. Two things surprised me from this thing. First one, the results were pretty good. But second, I had the opportunity to interview some of the patients. So I got two conclusions. And I got one, they published one of these ones. First one, it doesn't matter how crazy they were before they accepted to have this. 90% are happy. Maybe the bulimia through here is bad. Maybe here is not that bad. But second, and that's what I tell you how bad we are in the world, is that they discover that it's better to put the water before eating. Yeah, you go to a place, you have two glasses of water, so you're not going to eat the whole bread. So they don't want to drink the water. They put now the water before. So by the time they eat, they have already the water there. So not only dilute easier, but they feel more full. So what we are is lazy. What we look is for an easy life. But the patients are happy, it's approved. So you will see this coming in many, many places. And the company is now looking for reimbursement. Probably they will allow you to charge it like a regular PEC. So I don't know, but that's basically what they do. This one is not already approved in the FDA, and I think it's not gonna be approved the way it is now. The endobarrier is you're gonna put from the pylorus 1 meter below this tube that will prevent food to touch the mucosa of the small bowel. This is the concept. Food is here. The device is here. So this food is never going to touch that. It's going to come through here. They did it to weight loss. You know what they discovered? Is pretty good for diabetes. Remember I told you that the best operation for diabetes is the bypass? Because even we don't understand well the mechanism, the four good theory for diabetes and the bypass is that if you don't have contact in the first meter of the small bowel, even the next day after a bypass, you don't need medication for diabetes in most of the cases. We don't understand very well why. There are many theories, but we don't understand very well why. So they discover that this device you can leave in place for a year. During that year, diabetes was almost cured. And they were going to start the trials here after studies in 6 different countries in the world, Europe and Latin America. They start to see some hepatic abscesses from translocation of bacteria. They saw some ulcers for this. See, the fixation device. In order to fixate it in the pylorus by endoscopy, it caused some ulceration of the mucosa. So they didn't start the trials here. Surprisingly, the Diabetic Association from Switzerland and the German Association of Endocrinology, they came out with a statement saying that they will keep using it in Europe because what they've seen in their diabetic patients is pretty good. For that year, no need of medication. Once you remove it, because you have to remove it after a year, the effect lasts for 6 months more. So my understanding is this company has been bought by a big company that they're going to work in the device to make it safe for the future. So in conclusions, this is the first one. This is the word for most of you guys, GIs. I've been telling the surgeons if they don't do endoscopy, I understand all the politics of this, but I don't care because I don't speak English, so I don't care what the politics are. But somebody has to do it. Surgeons, GIs, whoever does this better has to do it. So we surgeons, we don't do endoscopy. This ended up to being like the radiologists with the vascular surgeons or the cardiac surgeon. They ended up losing a lot of vascular surgery because they didn't get involved. So we surgeons start to do better training in endoscopy. We did a study. We trained 2 surgeons and 2 GIs for a year in bariatric endoscopy. So we mixed the programs. So the GIs started going to surgery. They start to go to the lab. We allow them and teach them how we do the bypasses in animals and in models, model animals. And the surgeons were training advanced endoscopy, and then they cross over. Big surprise. By 4 months, the GIs were doing everything very easily. By 7 months, some of the surgeons were still looking how to do endoscopy because we are not that good trained for that. So the AB was created with surgeons and GIs with the idea that all these now blur a world for what it's coming for bariatric endoscopy. It's done by the person who does it better. It doesn't matter if it's surgeon. Or if it's a GI, to make sure he understands the bariatric patient and he understands the bariatric operations we do and he understands that the procedure is nothing by itself. If they don't have the multidisciplinary group, nothing is going to work. So that's where we're working now, but we are just starting there. So this is the first lesson. Even for the GIs, we discovered that a lot of GIs, they don't do advanced endoscopy. Either because they go to other branches, they go to a pathology, they go to something else, or they do just diagnostic endoscopy. And they don't go to the ERCPs, stents. So they need to learn that too if they want to go in this world. Second, kill as few patients as possible. You hear it in Latin, primum non nocere. So we surgeon has this tendency. So we want to be the first to try them. We think we are above the procedures. And we insist that all of our patients go to the procedure we suggest to them. And we proclaim cure. So we are changing that attitude. We cause remission. We help obesity patients. But we don't cure most of our patients. We just help them for a long term. But this is very important to me. This has music, but it doesn't matter. So this is my other conclusion. He thought he was inventing the wheel, but he came up with something better. So every time a new device came, we take a close look. I tried them, even with notes that went sideways, because I discovered that there are many good things that maybe they are not for they were designed. Maybe they are not good for this, but you find another use for them. And also, there are some things that doesn't look that good and at the end being pretty good. So that's what I say, you need to have this idea when you mix them or not. All I know is what we do today is not working. I mean, our surgery works, but it covers 200,000 people out of the 18 million people that need it. And it doesn't cover the all 40 million people that need something from us. So we need to be more inclusive with physicians, endocrinologists, GIs. Everybody will need to work together for this patient. So less aggressive approach, MI or endoscopic procedures, and much better medications. Thank you very much.